For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcast and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Thank you for joining another edition of Bumps and Thumps, the talk of wrestling. I'm Brian Ferguson. My guest today has been a true fan of professional wrestling since his childhood. He has been a promoter of pro wrestling since the 1970s, was awarded the Red Bastien Friendship Award from the Cauliflower Alley Club in 2020, and is currently the executive director of Southern Illinois Championship Wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor and pleasure to introduce Mr. Herb Simmons. Herb, thank you for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
Well, Brian, I appreciate the invite, and my hat's off to you for what you do on your program, keeping the memories of the passion that we share, and that's professional wrestling.
Yeah. You know, it's I started this a little over 2 years, well, just under 2 years ago now, and it's been a process, and I try to reach out to people, and sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no, but I really enjoy it. I enjoy the old era of wrestling, and I'm just looking forward to doing it some more and more, and with people like yourself coming on, it's great, because it brings that passion back, that era when, I don't know, the kayfabe era, I guess, when it was on. And I think that's a missing component of today's, the wrestling that's on television today. That's just my opinion. I don't know how you feel.
Well, and it's not only an opinion, it's the truth. When kayfabe went by the wayside, the sport that I grew up on, and I'll call it a sport, even though some people say that, oh, it's not, it's entertainment. I grew up in that era of the late, great Sam Muchnick, who was president of the National Wrestling Alliance for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. And in his protege, a young man that started with him when he was 16 years old, Larry Matisek, and was my good friend. And so, they're never going to take that away from me, because that's what I grew up on. Back in the day of, Dick the Bruiser, Johnny Valentine, Pat O'Connor, Gene Kaniski, I'm from the St. Louis region, and that's where Wrestling at the Chase started on television in 1959, when Sam Muchnick and the owner of the television station, Harold Koppler, made an agreement on an airplane, and it ran until 1983. And in fact, this month we'll celebrate, if it had it stayed on TV, we'll be celebrating the 63 years of it.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I've talked to other people that were like George Shire.
He's great guy.
Great guy. And I did a segment on St. Louis wrestling a few months back, and we talked pretty extensive about the Chase and the programming and everything. So it was.
I don't know if you can see there in the background, the wall.
Yep.
That's Sam Muchnick, Larry Matisek, and King Kong Bruiser Brody, or Bruiser Brody, wherever he was from, depending on what name he went by,
Yeah.
St. Louis, he was known as King Kong Bruiser Brody.
Yeah. And when he was in the AWA, he was King Kong Brody. That's how I remember him when I was a kid. He was King Kong.
Great guy, another great friend of mine. In fact, I caught your show last time when he had his widow on, Barbara Goodish, great lady. She'll be joining us in a week here. And in SICW. She comes in every year for me when we do the Bruiser Brody Memorial, and we always get her involved somehow.
Yeah. Great lady. When I spoke to her, you know, she was more than willing to come on the show and talk about stuff, and it was great. She's a fantastic person. I absolutely love her. So,
right.
Let's talk about you a little bit. Your childhood, you grew up St. Louis, you said, area. Talk about your childhood, how you grew up, and kind of getting into the business.
Yeah, I'm actually from the Illinois side, right out of St. Louis, Missouri. Grew up in East St. Louis, Illinois, in the housing projects, and grew up at a young age, very young age. My mother and I, my brothers and sisters, not so much, but my mother and I were avid wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. Used to pull the little black and white 12-inch television out and watch wrestling at the Chase when it, you know, would come on a Wednesday night, and then they rebroadcast it on a Saturday. But I got really hooked on it, like a lot of us did growing up. And I mean, just couldn't wait for it to come on television. And I always said the toughest, you know, the guys like Fritz Von Erich and Killer Kowalski, you know, St. Louis, I found out later on, it was the hub of professional wrestling. Anybody who was traveling from the East Coast to the West Coast always wanted to stop. And they were used to working in different arenas or ball, you know, some of them under tents back in the Carney days.
Yeah.
But they wanted to come to St. Louis and work in the beautiful Chase Park Plaza Hotel, one of the greatest hotels in the country. Kings and queens used to dine there, stay there for the Velvet Ball Parade. Just everybody, you know, it was a destination location when it come to, you know, all your great stars played there. But one of the top sellers was always wrestling at the Chase.
Yeah. I mean, when I talk, like I said, St. Louis was the mecca from the time the NWA was incorporated in 48 until the early 80s, really. Like you said, it was the hot spot. It was the if you wanted to be a star, you went to St. Louis. Yeah. That's what I was told.
You know, and you talk about the kayfabe part of it, but also what is lost in today's businesses, the territories. Mm-hmm. You know, when you had those different organizations that were part of that National Wrestling Alliance, even the AWA and people like that, everybody tried to work together to a certain degree. Sam Muchnick right here in St. Louis maintained that piece of the territory. He controlled that NWA title for all those years, and we always refer to him as the peacekeeper, because when a couple of those other promoters had a little dispute over who should be this or who should do that, they'd get Sam on the telephone, or they'd come into St. Louis for a meeting, and when they left there, they had an understanding, and Sam would usually be able to justify to them why it had to be done this way. And what I learned about Sam early on was that very smart businessman. You know, he was a sports writer early on after he got out of the service, and he always said the pie was big enough to cut up, and if you had that pie and you cut it up into say six pieces and there was a sliver left, he cut that sliver of piece of pie in six different pieces. And so everybody got equal shares. Yeah. And I think that's why he was so well respected in the business. And he told myself and Larry, you know, you keep your ears open and your mouth shut, and you'll go a long way in this business. And come February next year is my 50th year being involved in it.
Oh, wow.
And I've had people tell me that, my reputation is one that the boys respect, because when I tell them something's going to be there when they come in, it's going to be there. It's none of that, oh, well, I'll catch you next time. And because I, as I say all along, I'm just continuing to build on the foundation that these guys built many, many years ago.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I did some research on you, Herb, and you do have a lot of respect. I've read some articles and of other wrestlers that have interaction with you, and they have nothing but like total respect for you and what you've done. And congratulations on coming up on 50 years. That's a hallmark, and it's rare that somebody can do that for that long, especially in this today's world, you know. So congratulations to you.
Well, I appreciate that. Like I said, it's and I wouldn't have changed anything over. I mean, one of my highlights of that 50 years is when I got to meet Sam, and I've tried to maintain what he preached, and like I said, that was treat the boys right, they'll treat you right. Yeah. And it's worked. And like I said, I'm excited about that. Excited about being a part of the Cauliflower Alley every year. It's a great organization. Brian Blair, the president, CEO. Yeah. We just lost one of our good members, Carl Hauer, who was a great friend of mine for all those years. And then Charlie Smith, longtime referee in the business, we lost him just a day or two after Carl. So everybody's getting older, and that's why it's so important to cherish those friendships, you know?
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons why I want to – my wife and I want to go out there this year and get into that and to and be there. I mean – I've, like I said, Darla Staggs, I've talked to Barbara Goodish, Brian Blair, and they're just amazing people, and yourself. And I really want to experience the Cauliflower Alley Club, the reunion. So I'm looking forward to it. And, I'm really excited about it. It's in Vegas. I mean, it's in Vegas.
You just got to remember what happens in Vegas stays in
Vegas.
That's
right. That's right.
It'd be a great time, and I'm looking forward to it. And
me too.
I'm just excited about that. I go up to Waterloo, Iowa every year to the Thez Tragus Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. That's always a great time with people like Jerry Briscoe and, J.J. Dillon and Troy Peterson, a friend of mine that runs the local wrestling group up there, Impact Wrestling. Try to help him out all I can. And that's what I continue to try to do, is help out other promoters that want to – if they want to help, they know they can call me.
Yeah,
it's almost unheard of nowadays for a couple of promoters to be working together. But again, I try to reach that olive branch out there and say, I don't know it all, but I've been doing it. I've never been a worker, never claimed to be a worker, but neither was Sam Muchnick, neither was Larry Matisek. But I know how to promote.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty obvious. Like I said, I did that research on you, and that's very evident that you do know how to promote. So let's talk about, how did you get involved in the business? I know you watched it as a kid with your mom, but how did you get into the business side of getting into the promoting part of it? How did that come about?
Well, growing up, wrestling was big, as I said. Over in East St. Louis, there was a place called the Social Center in East St. Louis, Illinois. And my mom would take us there. We lived in the housing projects right down the street from there. And that was my first encounter of people like Cowboy Bob Ellis, Pat O'Connor, people of that sort. And as I said, I was just hooked. And so, growing up, I just knew that I didn't want to be a wrestler. I just, man, this is fascinating. It's got to be more to it. I knew at an early age that there was kind of like the wizard behind the curtain. There had to be some very mystique thing to this crazy thing called professional wrestling. And I kind of set my sight on finding out just what was behind that curtain. And man, I got to meet, growing up, I got into law enforcement, and my good friend Larry Matisek was in law enforcement, and where he lived at over here in Belleville, Illinois. And he was a household name back then. And of course, he would get me tickets to go to the shows. And he would take me to the office with him sometime. He started with Sam when he was 16 years old.
Oh, okay.
Got his first paycheck from Sam Muchnick, $25. And he used to write the programs, and he would call in the results to the local radio stations. And, you know, Sam told him he had a act for writing. Of course, Sam being a sports writer, he had the eye for that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I got to go to the office with him on several different occasions when people like Gene Kaniski would be sitting in the office, or Whipper Billy Watson, or Fritz von Erich. And Sam always told us, said, what you hear in between these walls, stay in here. Yeah. He opened up the file cabinets to us and said, you can look through anything you want. Just don't take anything out of here. And of course, now here in 2022, I have a lot of those files. I have all the results from those days of wrestling. I got everybody who ever wrestled in St. Louis, their win-loss records. I've got all the programs that was printed for those matches.
Wow.
And I've got a large collection of tapes dating back to 1962, up until 1983. And last year I was fortunate to get my hands on Dick DeBruiser's TV video collection that I purchased from his wife before she passed away.
Wow.
Because Dick DeBruiser was a big, big draw in St. Louis, of course.
Yep.
And so now I've got the chore. They're all on the inch and 2 inch TV reels.
Yeah.
I'm going to find somebody who can download them. And but I've had a couple of them done, and the quality is great. And I got to work with the Bruiser, you know, in the 70s when I was running quite often up into the border of Illinois and into Indiana. And that used to all be his territory in Southern Illinois. And when I first met Dick, we started off on a rocky road. And but over years, his ex-son-in-law, one of his ex-son-in-law, Spike Huber, came to work for Larry and I when Dick blackballed him after he had divorced Dick's daughter, and kind of put Spike out of the business, except for us. We were the only ones who was working Spike at that time. But but then Dick and I, you know, we worked together, and I would use some of his talent, and I started running that Southern Illinois areas that he used to. And but again, you know, meeting Larry was my my start in it, because he opened the door to Sam.
Yeah.
And then of course through Sam and Larry, I got to meet to people like Dick Murdoch, Bruiser Brody, Crusher Blackwell, Greg Valentine, Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. runs my Ace Wrestling Academy for me.
Oh, okay.
I gave Randy Orton his first job on the independent market 22 years ago over at the South Broadway Athletic Club. And so, and now look at Randy. I mean, you know, he's probably the hottest thing Vince has got going right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has been for all these years.
Yeah.
But Bob Morton, like I said, he still works for me. He's up in New Jersey this weekend at a wrestling convention, and he stays pretty active. He still gets climbs between those ropes for me and wrestles. And,
oh, wow. Gee.
In fact, just a couple of weeks back, I had him in a match, and he's going to be 70, I think, 4 years old this year.
Wow. So, that's amazing. That's
great guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, to answer your question, I know it's a long answer, but you know, Larry got me involved. I started doing some promotion with another young man from St. Louis. Tony Costa was the stage name. Him and I traveled all over Missouri and Illinois running shows and helping fundraise. And that's kind of what I still do all these years, helping nonprofit organizations, fire departments, police departments. Tomorrow I've got I don't know when this will air, but tomorrow in Cahokia, Illinois, I do a one for the Holy Family Church.
Okay.
We've been there several years in a row. And then, you know, these communities, found out over the years that you can have bingos, you can have barbecues, you can have poker runs, but something that always draws is professional wrestling. Especially when you do it the right way.
I was just going to say. Now, let me ask you this. You've been in this business for almost 50 years.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, he's declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Do you think that when you talk about doing community activities for nonprofits, is that, to you, a missing component in those, the big ones today, like the Impact up in, you know, and AEW and those? Do you think that's a missing component of their run because they're not going to make any money off of it or very little?
Well, but I think that it's kind of sad that they don't. Of course, my position is I've been in public service for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in law enforcement, firefighting. I've ran an ambulance company for 35 years. My day job now, I'm the 911 coordinator for our county, the seventh largest county in Illinois. Okay. I'm the emergency management director. So I've always been partial to first responders, mm-hmm. whether it be police, fire, EMS. And that's people who always end up on the short end of the stick when it comes to funding. They're asked to go out and save lives and protect people. And, a lot of times they do it on a shoestring budget. So if we can go out and help them raise some funds for some needed equipment they do, and I can do it on a small level. I hate the word independent. I kind of coined that many, many years ago. I tell other organizations and wrestlers, show me a license, a state that requires licensing. Show me a license that says you're an independent wrestler. It doesn't. It says you're a professional wrestler. And some of these guys that are on our level go out there and work harder than some of the guys that are on the bigger stage. I see it all the time. Mm-hmm. But, when I look at some of these organizations, and I know some of them do help charitable events, but a lot of times with a price tag. And, you know, like our events, you know, like for the Bruiser Brody Memorial, I'm bringing in Zeb Coulter, a.k.a. Dutch Mantel, who wrestled in St. Louis. He was big in the Memphis area years ago. People remember him from that, but they probably recently remember him from Zeb Coulter. You know, Barbara Goodish comes in, and I've had them all. Abdullah the Butcher, Jack Briscoe, Jerry Briscoe, Terry Funk, Dory Funk, people like that for these fundraisers. And it helps bring that older wrestling fan along with the new. I have a great locker room now that when we go out and do these fundraisers that they tear the roof off the building.
Yeah.
But they do it old school. We tell the stories.
Yes.
We do old school TV bookings. I do it just the way Sam Muchnick and Larry Matisek did it. I'll give you an example. On May 14th, we'll have our little house show at the Bruiser Brody Memorial. I hold the guys over Sunday afternoon. It's free. We have a studio audience. We'll take 4 weekly shows that Sunday afternoon, okay. And then we air them on our social media platform, and we're on an Intrigue TV station out of St. Louis, okay. that airs every week. And it's the old school. So we have that ability to tell that story over a 4-week period.
Yeah.
And then guess what? Here's that 5th week, and we're back at our house show, and the people for 4 weeks have got us to see how we built that storyline.
Yeah.
And it works. It worked then. Yeah. And that's what I tell people all the time. They say, oh, wrestling has changed. The business hasn't changed. It's the kind of the things that you talked about at the beginning, the kayfabe being gone, territories. But one of the big issues now that is a problem is the workers nowadays have some bad egos. They don't know how to check them at the door.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be a superstar. Everybody wants to get their high spots in and not tell those stories that we were talking about, that the way we do it during our TV tapings. And that's why we have fans that follow us week after week to where they can come and see that big payoff at the house show.
I got to agree with you. The storyline is non-existent today in the big ones, you know, and I think that's a big component that's missing. Now, there's a few wrestlers in there that tell a story, but very few and far between. And, you know, it's nice to hear that. And like I said, I did some research and you guys do it right. And I wish they did the territory system again, because people, I mean, there's very few that can last in an organization more than 2 or 3 years. At most. Now, there's our exceptions, of course. But, I mean, and then you can just move them on to another territory for a while, and then, you know, they can come back at a later date. And I think today, you know, if you're not in one of the big ones, that's it. You know, then they feel like they're not contributing, or they make a lot less money.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just, to me, when it was the territories, you know, you had the AWA, if a guy was like, okay, you're pretty much used up here, we're going to send you to Florida or St. Louis. And they worked down there for a while. And I think that's a missing component today. Because I've been told there used to be 26 territories, if I remember correctly, at one time.
Yes, sir.
And then, you know, all this other stuff happened, and now there's, you know, none. And
and that's kind of what I have the problem here in our area. Our area is oversaturated with promotions.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. Tomorrow night there's probably 7 or 8 matches of events going on within 20, 25 miles of one another.
Okay.
And then the rest of them are drawing, you know, anywhere from 30 people to maybe 100 people.
Yeah.
And these promoters, well, why? Why? Where's the fans at? Well, guess what? You know, in today's economy, in today's world, people only have so much money for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to pick and choose where they want to go.
Yeah.
I get chastised by some of the other promotions because I preach that, you know, I don't want guys working for other organizations within that 25-mile area of me. It should be more. Back in the day, you didn't work for another promotion if you worked. Your home base was in Nashville. You didn't go to Memphis and work. You better be 200-400 miles away working for somebody else, and you better have that promoter's permission. Now, I understand time has changed, but what I try telling these other promoters that will listen is, and the workers, if you're my top baby and I've got my strap on you, why would I let you go down the road 10 miles in front of the same audience usually, and they either turn you into the big heel or they're beating you up and they're saying, wait a minute, I saw you last week and you were the champion for SICW. Yeah. We just had a situation happen like that. A worker won the title at one organization, and 5 miles away the next week he gets pinned.
Oh.
And people are going, what? And I'm the one who gets chastised because, and then what I try to tell them is I'm trying to look out for you guys. Mm. When I talk about I want you to spread your wings and get out on the road, that's what I mean. Go to Chicago. I have guys that I send down to Tennessee or I send down to Southern Missouri. Mm. I've got two, maybe at the most three companies that I've really work with. There was a gentleman before he passed away, Bert Prentice. I don't know if you remember that name. He
ran USA.
Yep. He ran USA. He was in it a little bit longer than I was, about 52 years.
Okay.
His mom used to be the ticket taker for Vern Gagne.
Okay.
Him and I work close together. I would use some of his talent. I would send some of my talent down to Tennessee. We did Jerry Lawler's 50th anniversary at the Jackson Ballpark. A couple of my guys were down there. I had Luke Williams I took down, the Bushwhacker. Mm-hmm. But these guys nowadays think that if I'm not out there doing my weekend warrior stuff every Saturday or every Sunday,
yeah.
And then they don't understand why. It's called oversaturation.
Yeah.
Back in the day when Sam Muchnick did the TV taping, kind of with the pattern that we follow, it made you drool at the mouth to say, oh, my gosh, I can't wait for that Friday night to come to Kiel Auditorium. We saw last week what happened. We saw the week before how those two guys would be pulled apart. And here they are talking about Kiel Auditorium. And you'd get there and there'd be 7,000 to 12,000 screaming fans because they've been watching it on TV for the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't doing it here and then 5 miles down the road the next night.
Right.
So that's another thing that has changed. And again, I understand this is a new time, new generation, but the business hasn't changed. It's the people that have changed it.
Yeah.
It's the guys that are barely learning how to lace their boots up.
Yeah.
And then you got the guys who wake up one morning and say, I want to be a wrestling promoter.
Yeah.
They go and buy a ring somewhere and, you know, half of them don't have insurance. And I'm not knocking them. It's just that, you know, if you're going to do it and try to do it and preserve what we grew up on, you got to try to do it the right way.
Yeah.
And then they want to know why these fans are scratching their heads saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think if people that, like you said, want to start a promotion, they probably would be a good idea if you work for somebody that's already running one and get that at least a basic knowledge and background of how to do it, because it's not as easy as it appears to be. I mean, I've been to some where I didn't understand it. And then there's guys that run them beautifully like yourself. And that's because of experience, but you've also had that mentorship. And I think that's a component there that's missing a lot, is people say they could start up a wrestling business, hire some guys, and it's going to make money in 6 months, and it doesn't really work like that.
You know, if I could have taken the knowledge that I've got from Sam Muchnick and Larry Matisek and Bruiser Brody and people, and even the Dick Murdochs of the world, when I'd have him in on a regular basis, to sit in a locker room and just pick those guys' brains. And that's what I tell my guys nowadays. When I bring in a Manny Fernandez or a Ricky Steamboat, if you're not chomping at the bit to sit back there and pick their brain at intermission time, that's shame on you.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of guys, just a couple of over the years, say, why are you spending the money to bring them old farts in here? You know, they're washed up and we're the new generation. And I tell them, I said, let me tell you something. If I really want it to be a horse's rear end, I should be charging you to come in here because I'm giving you a lesson that you can't go by anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, to sit in a room with Ricky Steamboat or Tito Santana and pick their brain.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing it, shame on you, because I'm giving you all, you can sit back there all night and talk to them if you want to.
Yeah.
And a lot of my guys will.
Yeah.
They'll get that out and they'll sit there and take notes. There's only been a few of them that think they know it all.
Yeah.
They think they watch Monday Night Raw or Tuesday night this or Wednesday night this.
Yeah.
That's one of the first things we tell them at the Ace Wrestling Academy. We'll ask them, who watches Monday Night Raw and Tuesday night this? And when they raise their hands, we tell them, well, come back when you stop doing that. Because you can tell right away,
yep.
They've already got their mind made up. They walk in and say, this is my ring name and this is my gear I want to wear.
Yeah.
And they got a pair of tennis shoes on. And first of all, you need to go get you some gear.
Yeah.
So, you know, we try to teach them the right way. And we've had some good students that's turned out of there.
Mm-hmm.
A good friend of mine, Dr. Tom Pritchard, runs a great organization. I've sent people down there to him that have done well.
Yeah.
And Tom will be the first one to tell you that spread your wings, get you three or four guys in a car and go do some road trips. And then guess what? When you sit around and hear guys like Tom Pritchard and Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler sit around and talk about road stories, if you do what they've done, you know, 20 years down the road, you'll have some road stories to tell.
Yeah.
But you're not going to do it when you're traveling around one area about 20 miles away from one another, because you're playing in front of the same audience.
Yeah.
You're fighting, wrestling the same guys, and you're not getting out there. I should be able to send you to Tennessee or to Southern Missouri or up to Indianapolis or to Iowa, and you should be able to get in your ring with somebody you've never seen before and go in there and have a great match. If you're a professional, if you've been trained.
Trained right. Trained right.
Yeah. A lot of these, there's a difference in training and being trained right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things when people call and say, hey, we want to become a wrestler or we are a wrestler. We want to come to work for you. The first thing, as I say, well, where were you trained? And if it's from Dory Funk's school, hey, come on, I want you.
Yeah.
Or when Harley Race was with us, if they tell me they went to Races Academy, come, I want you.
Yeah.
But if you tell me that, well, you know, when we grew up, we jumped off of the garage and we had the mattresses out there. And again, nothing against that other than you don't fit into what I'm doing. And because the marquee says professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to try to bring to the fans.
Yeah.
Because there are still a good percentage of fans out there that want to see, they want to believe,
mm-hmm.
you know, they don't want to hear about all this other stuff. They come, I mean, I've got fans that's been coming to our shows for 40 years, generations of family
mm-hmm.
that sit in the front row, show after show. Don't you even try telling them it ain't nothing but real. I'm going to tell you, because you're going to have a real fight on your hands.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm one of the ones, too, that I don't want, you know, 20 minutes of the program, somebody in the ring talking. I want, you know, like it was in the old days, they come off, they talk to the interviewer for a minute or two, and then they'd leave, or, you know, they announce the next match, or they go in there, whatever it was. But it wasn't 20 minutes in the ring on the mic. You know, I mean, to me, that's not entertaining.
Well, especially some of them don't have that ability to even do a promo you know, that's an act. I remember Larry used to tell how they'd be standing in the ring to do an interview with somebody like a Gene Kaniski, and the way the camera shots would be, it was always get yourself over, get the big house show over, and I'll tap you on the leg when we got to wrap it up, because you had a floor director there telling you, hey, we got to get to commercial here because we got to pay the bills.
Yeah. Right. You know? Yeah.
And, but like you said, nowadays, especially with the bigger fit, and again, they've got the money. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah. They do.
And again, there's a lot of people and I'll get chastised because I'm talking about the bigger federations, but you know, I don't even think, I don't go to bed at night saying I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to be the next Vince McMahon of the world, because I don't want to be the next Vince McMahon of the world.
Yeah.
Now, do I want to have his money? Yeah, I'll take it if he gives it to me.
There you go.
But you know, I did his paperwork back when Illinois used to be the toughest athletic commission in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to have a doctor at ringside. You used to have to take blood pressures, you know, do all the vital signs on the wrestlers before they got in the ring.
Okay.
If their blood pressure was up, the doctor wouldn't let them wrestle. Well, when that was going on, when Vince would run into Springfield, Illinois, or to Peoria, and in order to be a licensed promoter in the state of Illinois, you had to be a resident of the state. And for several years, I was the only one that held that valid license. So I did Vince's about six different times, and mm-hmm. I would charge him about $500. And I tell people, if I'd have known what I know now, I'd have had another syrup. You know?
But then
he's the one that challenged the athletic board, athletic commission, and got it deregulated because he said it wasn't a sport, it was sports entertainment.
Yeah.
And now that's why we're oversaturated, because guess what? There's no athletic commission in Illinois. There's nobody keeping control of it. And that won't change until somebody gets hurt or somebody gets killed in a ring. Because, like I said, back then they were tough on it. Now, Missouri is pretty tough. Missouri requires blood work to be taken, and, you know, you got to be licensed. But Illinois, really, for a state that was really on the ball back then to drop it off, is sad. If they called me today and said, you got to have bonding, because we did before, you had to post a bond, you had to have the license, I'd be the first one to sign up for it, because I think at that time the strong will survive.
Yeah.
A lot better quality matches would be out there, promotions.
Yeah.
And again, it would make these other promotions start getting better.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to be done. They need to get better.
Herb, I agree 100% with you. Everything you just said, I'm in my early 50s, and I've seen, you know, when it was, what you said, how tough it was to get a license and all that. And you're right, it was better then. And also the promotions, they would come to the small towns. You know, when, I'll give you an example, AWA was in Minnesota, Minneapolis. I lived in Wisconsin, about two and a half hours northeast of Minneapolis. But they would come once a year to my hometown, to this Catholic school that they did a fundraising event for. And they'd have it in the high school, in their Catholic school gymnasium. And it wasn't the no-namers that would come. It was the back then, the Pateras,
the
Mick Bockwinkles, the Greg Gagne's, the Jim Brunzels.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, and it was great.
Baron Gretzky was probably there.
Yeah. And now you wouldn't see like the big ones, the WWEs, the AEWs, they wouldn't be, they'd go to Minneapolis, but they wouldn't come to Rice Lake. I know they wouldn't. They'd probably go to Milwaukee, and that's about it, and Green Bay, maybe, but that's it. I mean, and that's just a sign of the times, because it's about money, and I get you got to make money, but yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, and I say all the time that people say, man, when will wrestling at the Chase ever come back? Well, the NWA, the new NWA, Billy Corgan, was there a year ago, and we were fortunate enough to work with him on that. But I've told Billy, and I hope he watches your program here, because he knows I'll tell him the same thing. In order to say you own the NWA is one thing. Mm-hmm. You have to know what the NWA was. Otherwise, you just bought three letters. You bought the NWA letters. If you don't know anything about the history of it, and you can claim you want to know about it, but you got to know the fundamentals. You got to know how Sam Muchnick held, like we talked about at the beginning, how Sam Muchnick held it together for all those years.
Yeah.
I can take any worker out there that's worth his weight in gold, and I can either make him a baby or I can make him a heel in one night. I have proven that. That's where the magic comes in.
Yeah.
And it's nothing real hard. It's just knowing how to do it.
Yeah.
And I am so fortunate that I've got a locker room of guys that are professional wrestlers.
Yeah.
They understand that it's not about, I got to have this title. I got to have this. It's about putting butts in the seats, as Sam used to say.
Yeah.
And I tell people nowadays when I get asked to do shows like this, and I really, again, I want to thank you for having me on, because I enjoy talking about wrestling, as you can see.
Yeah, I do too.
But I tell people it's like baking a cake. You got to have all the right ingredients.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have that destination location. You've got to have a good group of workers that understand the business. And most importantly, you got to have the fans. And so how do you get the fans? You got to have the good workers.
Yeah.
And you've got those ingredients, you'll be successful at it. Yeah. Now, you're not going to make $1 million. You're probably going to lose money, but you're going to have fun doing it.
Yeah.
The fans are going to love it. And then you're going to take them back in time. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, we've got a film coming out June 4th. The premiere of Wrestling at the Chase comes out on PBS 9. It'll be all across the country, streamed across the country. I think I told you I was honored to help Larry Matisek write the first book of Wrestling at the Chase.
Yes.
And here recently I was honored to help the author Ed Wheatley write the second book on Wrestling at the Chase.
Okay.
And then I've been honored to help him with this film that the premiere will be June 4th.
Yeah.
I got to see about a 2-minute trailer of it last night. And I think it's going to continue carrying that legacy of Wrestling at the Chase on, because it talks about, start to finish with Sam Muchnick. And I think you'll see some sequels to it, because it's an hour film, and you can't take something that was 63 years this year and condense it into an hour program. And the author, Ed Wheatley, has wrote a lot of books on baseball, the St. Louis Browns. He won some awards and Emmys on the films for that, and I think he'll win an Emmy on this because it's such a household. To this day, you walk down the streets of St. Louis, Missouri, and you ask them, who was the toughest wrestler you ever went and seen? And I guarantee you they're going to tell you Dick the Bruiser. Dick the Bruiser was a household name in St. Louis.
Yeah.
The second one is going to be Bruiser Brody. When we were interviewing people for the book, the stories that were told about how grandma would get down on her knees and be counting with the referee, 1, 2, 3. Or you go to grandma and grandpa's house and pop popcorn and drink root beer floats when Wrestling at the Chase was on.
Yeah.
You heard that over and over.
Yeah.
When Larry Matisek and I reproduced, 12 volumes of the Wrestling at the Chase tapes 20 plus years ago that people are still buying today.
Yeah.
We heard those same stories. And that was a fluke. I knew Larry had those films in his den, and we talked every day. Not a day went by him and I wouldn't talk. And, every day I'd say, well, why don't we do something with those films? And he'd always say, Herb, nobody wants, they're not interested in that. He said, I'm going to keep them. When Kelly gets older and has a family, she'll be able to show them what Grandpa used to do. And one morning, boy, out of the clear blue sky, he calls me and says, you're right, big boy, let's do something. So we found a producer. We remastered them, and we put the first 3 volumes out, and I'll show you how long ago it was. We put them out on VHS. But we didn't know anything about DVDs then.
Right.
So the volume 1, 2, and 3 were on VHS, and we were selling them for $34.95 for a 2-hour VHS tape. And we didn't plan it that way, but when we got them all done, we looked at the calendar, and it was like the 1st of November of that year. And I called Larry. I said, do you realize what we've just done? And he said, what are you talking about? I said, what's the next big holiday past Thanksgiving?
Christmas.
And he said, Christmas. We in my living room at my home, my kids, we had ironing boards, the old ironing boards,
Mom had.
We had them set up, and we had an assembly line, and my children were helping package them up. I was making the labels for the front of them. My little post office here in East Gronelette, where I've been the mayor at now for 39 years, my wife would pull up down here every morning with boxes of tape. We shipped them all over the country. And so the gentleman who put those first three VHS tapes out went through a divorce and got out of the business, so we had to find somebody else. Well, Larry found a gentleman who used to coach volleyball with him that was in the business also. So we go to him, take him some of the tapes, and he says, man, how old are some of these? And we say, well, the oldest is 1962. He said, man, they're probably like sawdust. He pops it into his machine, and good quality.
Yeah.
He says, I got a question for you. He said, why are you doing them on VHS? And Larry and I looked around and said, well, what are we supposed to be doing them on? He said, DVDs. And we both looked at him and said, what the hell is a DVD? He reached over a jar and pulled out a DVD. And then from that point on, we started putting on DVDs.
Yeah.
And we did 12 volumes. And when Larry passed away, we were working on volume 13. And I keep telling myself I'm going to finish it and get it out there. But he was so it's like he had another book he was working on, and he was one chapter away from getting it done. And the story of that is the difference between Sam Muchnick and Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
And it was probably the hardest book that he had written, because I said, you know, this is going to be the hard one, because you start it with Sam.
Yeah.
He was kind of like your mentor, taught you everything. And then you worked for Vince McMahon for 10 years. So you got to be honest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make you be honest, because I knew that Sam was a crude businessman, and I knew Vince McMahon was very, very crude, shrewd. And Larry despised Vince McMahon on what he did to him in St. Louis and stole the TV away from him. And I said, but you can be harsh, but you can't be hateful, because people will see that. So I know what the last chapter is he wanted to put in there, and his wife and I keep saying that we're going to get it done and then let her publish it and go out and try to get the word out there. But if he could have lived a little bit longer, he'd have finished it.
Yeah. Boy, you're a busy, busy, busy man. I will say that. You've done a lot of stuff, and a mayor and an emergency manager. Wow.
Yeah, but I love wrestling.
And you love wrestling. That's the best part, right?
I tell my wife that's my escape from reality. And even though every day I got to go to work, I still enjoy it. Like tomorrow night, getting ready for the big show, and then the Bruiser Brody Memorial.
Yeah.
I mean, we're booked up throughout the rest of the year.
That's great.
And it's a, you know, and then if I go to Cauliflower Alley, that's always a great time. And then Waterloo, Iowa. Today I was on the phone with a gentleman, Seth Turner, from Albany, New York, of the Hall of Fame that they're putting in up there. Great, great thing taking place there. I hope to go up there at the end of August. They've invited me up there.
Great.
Because they want to, and here just goes to show you the impact of St. Louis and wrestling at the Chase. Mm-hmm. Mr. Turner doesn't know a whole bunch about St. Louis, didn't know anything about wrestling at the Chase, because he's from New York area, you know, New Jersey, all that area on the East Coast. But he has read every one of Larry Matisek's books, and he got so involved with the reading and the writing of how Sam Muchnick conducted his business. He has patented himself of different things that Larry wrote in that book. He said, I could visualize Sam. Mm-hmm. And so when he hooked up with me just last couple of days, J.J. Dillon's daughter, Pam, and J.J. is on the board of directors for that place up there. And, of course, they all gave me a good bill of sale for him.
Yeah.
Told me, he said, man, he says, you are, it's like the stars got aligned, because that's one thing that our Hall of Fame is lacking, is that NWA connection.
Yeah.
And with you having the tapes, and, you know, I got the books of all the programs that Sam produced dating back to the late 30s and 40s before he was even with the NWA. So I've got all of them that hopefully some of them will end up in that Hall of Fame of people to be able to view them and enjoy them like I do.
Yeah. So you're kind of the, where George Shire is the AWA historian, you're the NWA historian.
No, George, I appreciate my name even being mentioned with George, because George is a walking encyclopedia.
Oh, I know he is. Yeah.
I'd hate to see them two sit down if I was Larry Matisek.
Yeah.
Up until the week before Larry passed away, he was still matchmaking for me, putting my matches together, still writing the books. Yeah. And if you said, Larry, do you remember what Gene Kaniski's family, who was all in his family? Just like that.
Yeah.
Or if you ask him, hey, do you remember in 1969 when Pat O'Connor took on Lou Thesz? He'd say, oh, yeah, it was a 2 out of 3 fall match. Thesz took the first fall with the Thesz press. Just a walk-in. And that's kind of a George Shire.
Oh, that's George. So, yeah. That's George.
So I appreciate you mentioning my name with George. But, no, I love George. And,
yeah, he's a great guy.
Great guy. And he – you know, there's a lot of Scott Romer, another good friend of mine, you know, was with Dick DeBruiser. Zargan was married to Dick's daughter also at one time, and a great photographer. He took photos of presidents and kings, queens, you name it. Scott is a great guy.
Yeah.
Another one that knows the ins and outs of the business real well because he worked with Dick DeBruiser. And, there's a lot of those guys. Bill Apter. Now, there's a guy.
Yeah, Bill Apter.
That made people's careers
with
those magazines.
Yeah.
I love Bill.
Yeah.
Bill and I talk all the time, and I brought him in one time. It was his birthday, and he wanted to get involved. And, you know, normally you'll see a routine where I got a pesky manager that – you would think that he'd end up with a cake in his face, and Bill said, no, it's my birthday. Let him put the cake in my face. And of course we did. And then of course he got to do his karaoke and sing in my way. And I love Bill Apter.
Yeah,
and, but there is a guy, you know, we inducted him into the St. Louis Wrestling Hall of Fame, and he was so proud of that. You know, that was the other thing Larry and I started with a couple of other individuals, the St. Louis. And it's a true Hall of Fame of people who built the business, starting with Sam Lesnick and Whipper Billy Watson, Fritz Von Erich, the Briscoes, the Funks, Johnny Valentine, Cowboy Bob Ellis. There's no limousine drivers in it, of course, or any movie stars.
Yeah.
These guys that laced their boots up, and Penny Banner was the first female we put in there. The May 14th, we're inducting Joyce Grable, who was another one of the females wrestlers that was in St. Louis quite a bit. We're putting her in there, and we're going to be close. We may have room for one or two more, but when we first started that, the first seven inductees, we allowed the fans to vote on them.
Okay.
But then after that, I told Larry, I said, this is too much like work because, you know, you got all the fans' opinions and I'm fielding the questions and trying to. So I said, we've got all the stats from everybody who worked there.
Mm-hmm.
We knew who had the draw power.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of base it on that.
Yeah.
And so from that point on, we started just doing, you know, how many matches Dick DeBruiser had. What was his win-loss ratio? What was his drawing power, which was great. So that's why he got in there real quick. But now it's when you talk, and we got a portable one that we can haul around. In fact, that's what I talked to Zeph Turner about today, of taking it up to New York the end of August and put it on display.
Awesome. Well, that's great. You know, I wish I could get to that Bruiser Brody Memorial next weekend, but unfortunately I won't be able to, and won't be able to go up there in Iowa in July, but I will be in Las Vegas.
That's great. You'll have a great time.
Yeah, and I hope to see you there. I hope you make it, and I'd love to meet you in person. And I want to thank you for coming on to the podcast. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy man from what you even just told me in this hour. you're quite busy, so I appreciate the time.
Well, I appreciate the invite, and please keep up doing what you're doing. I went back and researched a lot of the ones that you've had on there, and a lot of them is friends of mine. And like I said, the one you and Barbara just did was great. I called her and said, "Quit mentioning my name in those podcasts." And but she's a sweetheart, like I said, she. For what she went through in 1988, I don't know. I think the wrestling is what's kept her going all these years now, and it's really a blessing for her. But again, thanks for having me on. Anytime I can fill a spot for you, all you got to do is call me.
Thank you, Herb. I appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Herb Simmons, if you're listening, thank you. If you're watching, thank you, and we will talk to you soon.
Hey, this is a Total Package. Lex Luger, you're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out.
Hey, guys, before we get started, I just wanted to read this commercial because it's an agreement that we made with a really great podcast, and I want to tell you guys all about it. Pro Wrestling Interviews, it features guests who are hot indie stars as well as the greats of the ring. Each week, you can join the Amazing Velvet as well as Dr. John as they host this jam-packed hour of interviews, pro wrestling news, and entertaining guests. It's an hour you don't want to miss. Trust me, you don't want to miss it. Every Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, just go to ProWrestlingInterviews.com, and it'll take you to their Facebook page where you can get the custom podcast link for that week. Don't miss a second of Pro Wrestling Interviews. That's Sunday nights, 9 Eastern, ProWrestlingInterviews.com.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Kazzy Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Haku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into, like, snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Yo, this is Jerry Stiles of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobbs here. You getting ready to get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby.
VOC Nation is one of the longest-running wrestling podcast networks, having started way back in 2010. VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Crisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Works. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Bill Apter has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, Tony here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill Apter's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my own.
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Graham, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, Apter's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is? Well, I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found the true world champion. I finally found...
What's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think... I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion.
Here are exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill Apter, and once again, we're speaking here with... Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it a loss.
Did Brennan have anything to do?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this, that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out. VOCNation.com. WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
This is Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the VOC Nation.